Welcome to the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. Today's great conversation is with the novelist, philosopher, and filmmaker Behrouz Bouchani. Behrouz's book No Friend But the Mountains has just released and was written over 5 years throughout his imprisonment on Manus Island. I'm Andrew Popel, and every week I explore books, writing, and literary culture, broadcasting Final Draft from the studios of 2SER in Sydney. Great Conversations is a way to enlarge that discussion. It's a weekly podcast sharing the stories and issues that make our world tick, getting behind the scenes and talking to the creators of the books that you love. And today's episode is a unique one. Many of the books we discuss on Final Draft engage with topical, even urgent issues of our culture and society. But No Friend But the Mountains takes the reader to Manus Island and invokes the horror of living imprisoned with no certainty or understanding of your fate. Behrouz has been imprisoned on Manus Island for 5 years and in that time has written journalism and produced an internationally acclaimed film. Chaka, Please Tell Us the Time. No Friend But the Mountains imagines his journey, his life and experiences on Manus, detailing the oppression and torture of a life imprisoned. Now, Behrouz is still imprisoned on Manus Island with no freedom to leave. Our conversation was recorded over WhatsApp, and you can clearly hear the weather and conditions in the background. So please forgive the audio quality at times as you join me in discovering No Friend But the Mountains.
No Friend But the Mountains is... you know, actually is a part of Kurdish culture, that Kurdish culture say in the courts, no half friend, but the mountains. Okay, my name is Behrouz Bouchani. I am a novelist, a Kurdish novelist and journalist, currently living on Manus Island. I am here for 5 years. The Kurdistan history is a real, a big tragedy. And the Kurdish people know no friend but the mountains. So, and you know, mountains is a main part of our, you know, Kurdistan nature and has a big impact on music, on food, on, you know, people's perspectives. And, you know, it's very important, Kurdish, you know, the mountains in Kurdish culture. As a big part of the nature. Mm-hmm. So, that's why I named the book No Friend But the Mountains.
What I was really curious when I discovered the book, I had read your journalism and you've had an expansive body of work in journalism through organizations like The Guardian since your imprisonment. Can you tell me about the difference in approach and style that you bring in a novel, in No Friend But the Mountains?
Yeah, actually, you know, people in Australia, and especially, you know, particularly those people who have involved in our plight on Manus Island and Nauru, know me as a journalist and a filmmaker, because I made the movie Chaka, Please Tell Us the Time, that I would like to talk about the movie as well.
Of course.
So they know me as a journalist, but I myself know myself as a novelist first. So, and you know, I have worked on this book over the past 5 years. And you know, it took a long time because it was a very hard process. And also it's really was, you know, writing with literary language is really hard. It's very different with journalism work. So when you work on a journalism work, on an article, so it is easier to write. But writing with literary language is really hard. It's really difficult, and you should have some space, and you should, you know, so that's why it took a long time that I write it down, and I was waiting for, you know, publishing this book for 5 years. So, yeah, but now that people read this book, they understand that I am a novelist. So That's why I think there is a some you know different you know understanding between the people who are following our situation and my words and my understanding, because I understand myself as a novelist. So people ask me that, why did you decide to write this book in with literary language? And they said, because, you know, it is a simple question and the answer is simple as well. I say the answer is that I am a novelist, because I am a novelist. So that's why I wrote it in this language. And if I wouldn't be if I was not in Manus Island and I was free in somewhere else, definitely I would write a different novel. But yeah, so of course I am a novelist and I write novel.
I was very struck by your language in No Friend But the Mountains. You move through prose and lyricism, and you very much work hard to define and help the reader understand language, from the monikers that you give to your fellow prisoners, through the naming of Manus as a prison to you. I mean, very much in Australia, we hear ideas of detention, not prison. But what does it mean for you to write and to create and to define language in your novel?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, for a long time, I published in my articles and I, you know, explain my thinking that we should don't follow the you know, the official language. We should don't follow the governmental language. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Yeah. So, because, you know, the official language and the government always call this place offshore processing center. But for us is a prison. And we have been in a real prison. So that's why I create a new language. So we need the, we don't have to follow the official language. We don't have to follow the, you know, the governmental language, because they are, you know, creating this prison and they have been able to keep us in this prison for 5 years through their language. So we should create our language. And we should, you know, create our concept. So that's why I create some concept like carceral system, systematic torture, prison. And so I think these concepts are true and we should follow these. And we should work and fight through our own language. And for a long time, I say to the organization and to the advocates and to, you know, human rights people that we should create our language and we don't have to follow the governmental and official language. And the problem, my big problem with the journalism language is that in the journalism language, the media always following the, you know, this language, the official language. So that's why I think the journalism language is very weak to describe the situation. It's very weak to describe the life on Manus prison. It's very weak to, you know, tell true about, you know, what is happening on Manus and Nauru. So that's why I think it is very important. So in this book, I created many new concepts, and I think they are basic concepts, and the organizations and the advocates and human rights defender people should fight against this system, should fight against this policy on base of those concepts. So yeah, that's why I I think this book is very important. One of the reasons is that we have our own language to fight against this system.
I think people often forget the power in language and the way naming something can then define it. I want to take you for a moment to the opposite of what we were talking about, and I want to talk about silence. What role does silence and invisibility play in maintaining a system like Manus Prison? And what do you hope for No Friend But the Mountains in occupying the space that this silence leaves?
Yeah, you know, actually this book, No Friend But the Mountains, when I have started to write it, you know, my aim was to create a work and create a book as a piece of art that remain forever. So, and be over the generations, over the time, and over the places. So we can say that this book is not for this time. It's not for this historical time. Mm. It's not only for this historical time. And also, it's not only about refugees. It's not only about the Kurdish people. It's not only about, Australia. This book is belong to unknown readers from around the world. Mm. This book is for next generation as well. So that's why I think it's very important. And I spent so much time to create this book. And, you know, my aim is to have a big impact on, Australian society, particularly Australian society, and, have a deep effect and impact on this policy. And I hope that people, by reading this book and, introduce this book to others and pass the book to other readers, make people aware that what the Australian government has done on Manus Island and Nauru. So I think this book has this potential to create change. And, over the past 5 years, many people, have done many protests against this policy on Australia. But nothing changed. Nothing changed. Many media published their stories. And I myself, I published many articles. I made a movie that got a global attention, but we couldn't change this policy. Mm. But I think this book has this potential to create change. This book, I believe in this book, and I believe in literature. So that's why I think this book will create change, and this book will find its way. This book will find its position. So I think in future, people will think about this book more than this time that we are. So, yeah, by taking time on next year and next generation, I think this book will be more valuable.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
How I understand this book.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to help people discover this. You mentioned before the Kyriakal system, and in No Friend But the Mountains, you outline this world of hierarchy and privilege and unspoken power within the prison, where a man may occupy the front of every line unchallenged, or a group may control a mango tree, and yet all of these people must succumb to the officers who have their own power hierarchy between the Australians and the Papuas. Can you talk to me about Kyriaki and the operation of the Kyriakal system within the Manus prison?
Yeah, I think when I say Kyriakal system, I don't mean only, this system exists on Manus prison or on Nauru. When I say Kyriakal system, I mean in outside of Manus as well, in Australian society. You can see Kyriakal system in, the social structures and political structures in Australia as well, in hospitals, in, educational system, in the universities, in, military places, and, all of the structures, we can see a part of hierarchical system, and a system that tries to take people identity, take people, humanity, and what I am understanding is that the Manus prison is the main hierarchical system. So by studying about Manus prison and the hierarchical system that is controlling Manus prison, by studying this prison, deeply and try to understand that how they are torturing people, we can understand the other part of hierarchical systems in the other social and political structures and Australia and other Western countries. So that's why I call this book, Beyond of Manus Prison, and I call this book as a book for Australia and other, Western countries. So, I think people, by reading this book, they can find some similarity in their, in the society. This week I will publish an article on the Saturday paper in Australia that I compare the book No Friend But the Mountains and Manus Prison with the movie I, Daniel Blake. This movie is one of the most important movies over past few years, and directed by the famous director in UK, Ken Loach, and it's very important. So I compare the book and the movie I, Daniel Blake, and I explain that how is similar, system that is running Manus Prison and the society. So I explained that, and I hope that people read this article, and I try to take them through this hierarchical system to understand it. So, I compare it, and I believe that there are too much similarity between hierarchical system and Manus Island and Manus Prison and other parts of the society.
Within the operation of the hierarchical system, as you describe it, I saw this horrible absurdity, the comings and goings, but ultimate in inertia that could almost be deadly. I think about the way you evoked the hospital medical facilities and the way people would force themselves and become addicted to things like paracetamol. And at times I was reminded of people like Samuel Beckett's work with this sort of absurd inertia. Is it only through the operation of the hierarchical system on an individual's sense of self and sense of position that this absurdity can work?
This, when I say hierarchical system, is a system with some parts. So just I want to give you an example, you a picture. When I say hierarchical system on Manus Prison, this hierarchical system has some, elements, some small part of system, like, medical on Manus Prison is a system that is controlling by the hierarchical system. The guards, immigration, case managers, interpreters, all of those people who are working on this system and who are a part of this system, they put people through, many rules. And in the end, people don't receive what they ask. For example, when a refugee is sick, he has to, fill a request form and wait for a few days. After few days, they call him and he should go to medical, and he has to stay in the long queue And when he go there, he should stay there for an hour, 2 hours to see a doctor. But he see a nurse. And then they give him some painkiller and send him back. Mm-hmm. And he after a few days, he again has to fill a request form. So they put him through a long, long, period with, bureaucratic system. And in end, the people die. Mm. In end, Hamid Khazai in the book, you can see that he died. But he fight a lot to get medical treatment. But they put him through a rules just to torture him. Mm. And, he feel that he give up and go back to his country. So the torture is not physically torture. Mm. Although I describe many physically, tortures by the guards. But the main thing is that they are torturing people through many rules. They are torturing people, mentally. So, and just I want to ask, I want to tell this, that maybe people say that, yeah, it's okay that you stay in the long queue and you fill a request form to get medical treatment. Yeah, it's easy, but just for a few days, for a month, not for 5 years. Mm. So imagine a person be sick in this system for 5 years. Of course, this system has this power to destroy anyone. And we can see in Manus Island and Nauru that 12 people already died and many people damaged physically and mentally. Mm. So we can see. We can see the result of this system. We can see the result of this systematic torture. So that's why I think it's very important that because the main part of the book is chiratical system, the main concept, but we cannot reduce the book only and put it only in one category. Mm. We cannot say that this book is a political book or this book is philosophical book. This book talk about nature and power of nature, that how nature is important and powerful to break this hierarchical system. This book he talk about morality, philosophy, that how is important. This book talk about humanity and a deep desire to get freedom and justice. So when you read the book, you can see that I, as one of the characters, always am trying to, leave the prison, go out, and sometimes I go on top of a tree and stay there, You can see in my character that always I am trying to get some small freedom, So I think the main thing, I would like to say that the people who are following the Agamben, the philosopher of, an Italy philosopher, I think they should read this book. Mm-hmm. Because this book is criticize Agamben theories. This book criticize that, we have some, we have some ways to fight against this system, against the chiratical system. And that is, the main character is Meisam the Whore. Mm. If you read about him, if you read his and think about his character, he is, he doesn't do any violence against the system. He always is playing with the system. He is dancing. He is singing. He has too many performance. He is playing with the rules. So we can see that, there is some ways. We have some ways to fight against this system. And that is nature. That is the power of nature. That is the power of art. That is part of power of, theater, performance, dancing, and playing with the rules through art. So that's, yeah.
Can I
hope you understand my English well.
You are doing you are inspiring me, and I'm understanding you very well. Can I ask you to talk to me some more about freedom? Because throughout the book, you explore the construction and development of the prisoner's identity and the relationship to the concept of freedom. And in your character, you even mention being frightened of freedom. How does this, you got me thinking about myself as well. How does a system work itself up around an individual to the point that it makes them frightened of freedom? Or do we even understand what freedom is?
You know, so your question is that about only myself, is that right?
Well, my question is about the idea of freedom, and you got me thinking about the way I operate and move within systems in my world and what I understand freedom to be. And it struck me that in No Friend But the Mountains, you discuss freedom in relation to yourself, in relation to the other men around you. And simply thinking about freedom is a product of imprisonment, it struck me. And freedom is not something that I think about because it's part of my background. I consider myself to be free. And as soon as I started thinking about freedom, I realized ways in which my world is constrained. What does thinking about freedom and thinking about imprisonment mean for an individual's identity?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, freedom is a concept that needs to understanding. So people should understand freedom. Many people, they think are free, and they think that they are living in freedom, but actually they are not living in freedom. So maybe someone in a prison have some part of freedom, and other people who are free, who, you know, they are not living in freedom. So the freedom for me is the concept that you should understand it. And freedom is that you don't be a part of the structure, you don't be a part of the system, and you don't be, you know, that is freedom in my understanding. Just imagine people in Australia, many people I know in the, you know, universities, in the educational system, that always they are complaining because, you know, the structure put them through a situation that just they work and work, and they, you know, the system take their identity, take their, you know, freedom. And, you know, even they know have this power to leave the job. They know have this power to leave their job, and, you know, they know have this power to do whatever they want to do. So for me, you know, my understanding is that freedom is a concept that you should understand it, and it's different person by person.
But it's a deliberate process that every individual has to undertake. I want to talk then about art and the role of art. In his introduction and translator's note, Omid observes how integral narratives are to living life well. And he talks about how your translating No Friend But the Mountains helped him understand that. Now, you're imprisoned illegally at the hands of the Australian government. So it's hard to say that you are living well at the moment. It's certainly not the life you would choose for yourself. But what has the process of crafting this book brought to the way you live life? I mean, it was a very unique process and it's taken you 5 years, but what did that process bring to the way you live your life?
You know, actually, I always say that writing and creating art is, you know, is a way that I survive. So I writing, and I creating art, you know, And, you know, I am living through my works to survive. So that is important. So this book, written in a, you know, very hard, harsh condition, and actually with a very, you know, incredible process, because I send this book bit by bit, text by text to my translator, to Omid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a very hard, you know, process for me in a situation that I, you know, didn't have access to internet. So it was really hard to, you know, it's really hard to, when I think about the past, that how did I write this book? It's very incredible for myself as well. Mm. So, it was really hard, but what I am thinking, I am, you know, you should, you know, imagine a prisoner. Mm. I mean, me, I am a prisoner.
Yes.
So in a prison, that the system always, you know, reduce me to a number. They call me MEG 45. They didn't call me Beirut. They call me MEG 45. They, you know, always try to, you know, the system is designed to humiliate me and others and take our identity. So writing for me, you know, give my identity back and give me power, give me, you know, keep my morality, keep my humanity. So the writing for me is an act of resistance. Art for me is an act of resistance to survive.
You relate?
Sorry, sometimes I cannot understand your English well.
I'm sorry.
Just I understand a few of your words, so, and then I thought maybe my answer are very different with your question.
No, that answer was perfectly matched to my question.
Yeah.
I have one more question for you, Beirut. Thank you. You've taken so much time to talk to me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
If I may, though.
Yeah, actually, your question is very different with others, so that's why I enjoy.
Oh, thank you.
Other journalists, they always ask some very superficial questions. So,
I did read a lot of interviews that you've done about the book. And while I appreciate the way those journalists have got the story out, I really wanted to understand the book as a work of art, as a novel, as a product of your mind.
Yeah.
If I may I ask you one more question before I let you go?
Yeah. Okay.
There's a section in the book where you're reflecting on your upbringing, you're reflecting on the Kurdish people and the way they have sat between different conflicting forces. And you ask the question, do the Kurds have any friends other than the mountains, referring to the refuge that the mountains gave to families, your family.
Yeah.
But then I also see how much you have collaborated on this book with your different translators and the people you've worked with. And in the introduction, I see conversations with Omid where you talk about the importance of collaboration. So I'd ask you, what role do friendships play for you at the moment and collaboration? Do you have any friends other than the mountains at the moment?
Yeah, you know, actually, just first I would like to say something about No Friend But the Mountains. No Friend But the Mountains is, you know, actually is a part of Kurdish culture. That Kurdish culture say no friend but the mountains. The Kurds no have friend, so but the mountains. So if people read about the history of Kurdistan and Kurdish culture, they can see that how the Kurdistan history is a real a big tragedy, and the Kurdish people no friend but the mountains. So, and you know, mountains is a main part of, you know, our you know, Kurdistan nature, and has a big impact on music, on food, on, people's perspectives. And, you know, it's very important, Kurdish, you know, the mountains in Kurdish culture as a big part of the nature. So, that's why I named the book No Friend But the Mountains. But about the collaboration, actually, you know, when I arrived on Manus Island, when they sent me here, I didn't know anyone, and I swaggered the phone, and I started to work. First, I met with Janet Galbraith. She's, that I dedicated the book to her, because we worked a lot over the past 5 years. And then she introduced me to Arnold Zabel, the Australian novelist and writer. And then I met some journalists. And, you know, day by day, I created a network around myself, and I started to work with the human rights defenders, with the organization, with the journalists, with the artists. And, you know, so I created a network, and I created a team around myself. And I always call them a family, because we, these people who I mention their names in the book, many people, we have been working together, because I believe in, collaboration. Always I try to, get advice from people, or, I always welcome to the new ideas from the people. And I believe in that. But for the book, actually, I wrote the book. I wrote it and I sent it out. And most of the collaboration was between the translator and other translators. So, most of the collaboration that we mention in the book is between Omid and other people like Munes, and, that she translated many of my works, Sajjad, Janet, Arnold, these people, Kerely Jordan, these people who are, most of the collaboration was between Umid and those people, because, translating is very hard. So it's really hard, and it's really hard in this book. It's more harder because I am a Kurdish, and Omid did many research about the Kurdish culture, did the many research about the Kurdish writers and history of Kurdistan, literature and poetry, and he tried to understand the pictures in the book, because I write this book as a Kurd. So, and also Omid was, is an Iranian. So he could understand some part of the book that is related to the Iranian literature and Iranian history. And that's why I think it was very important. And sometimes I say that if I only one person, would translate this book, that was Omid, because this book I use many, nomadic elements in the book, many concept from the very very traditional culture. Elements, and I think Omid, and also in other side is very modern, elements. So I think Omid was great to translate this word, but he had a very good collaboration with other people to translate it.
I'm so glad you had this family that you've been able to develop around you, Behrouz. I want to thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for taking the time. I'm so glad that I'm going to be able to share No Friend But the Mountains with my listeners, and hopefully, I mean, I've already got a few people that want to steal my copy off me, so I'm going to share this book as far and wide as I can. It's hard to say have a nice day or something trite when I sign off to you, because I know you're still in a terrible situation, but
I understand. Thank you very much.
I look forward to the day when
it's very kind of you.
I look forward to the day when I can see you free. Thank you, Beruz.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That's it for this great conversation with Beruz Bashani. Beruz's novel No Friend But the Mountains is out now through Pan Macmillan. Great Conversations is recorded on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation at 2SER's Broadway Studios in Sydney, Australia. The show is produced and presented by Andrew Popel. If you're enjoying Great Conversations from Final Draft, then hit subscribe in wherever you listen to your podcasts. And look, if you want to discover more fantastic Australian writing and have it delivered to your phone every day, you can give us a rating, you can subscribe, and that really also helps other people find these books, find great Australian literature. If you want to keep up with the latest in books, writing and literary culture, even find out what's coming up on the show, you can follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, and we're now on Instagram. Just look for @FinalDraft2SER. My name is Andrew Popel. It's been a pleasure bringing you this conversation today. I love that I can help people find these amazing books and get deeper into these issues, think about them. I'll be back next week with more great conversations from Final Draft, and I'm looking forward to seeing you then. Bye now.